Good day, good people. I'm Brother Robert Farrell. Welcome to Contemplative Inner Beings Wisdom Wednesday. Wisdom Wednesday is recorded live on Crowdcast, and we invite all of our podcast and YouTube listeners to join us any Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central. Whether you are here for the live session or you are enjoying one of the recordings, thank you very much. Tonight we are going to delve into this topic of falling upward, the second half of life, in our wisdom reflections. And we're going to encounter two brief wisdom contemplations, and each one of those is going to be followed by a period of silence where you're invited into this spiritual practice of resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Resonate, does something connect with you? And that might be symbolized by a single word or phrase that you hear. Reflect, an opportunity to ponder deeply, to meditate with images and thoughts. Respond, can respond in all kinds of ways, such as journaling or prayer or movement. And rest, simply be silent and open to the presence and action of divine love in your life. After that, we'll close with the spiritual practice and enter into a period of group dialogue together. As we embark on this exploration of wisdom, let's take a minute to center ourselves. Find a comfortable position, allowing your body to settle into a relaxed state. You can close your eyes if that feels comfortable for you. Take a deep breath in. Feel the air filling your lungs, and then exhale slowly. Release any tension that you might be holding. Now let's do that again together, breathing in deeply and exhaling fully. Breathing in and breathing out. Now, bring your awareness to the present moment. Feel the connection between your body and the ground beneath you. Notice this presence, this moment, without judgment, simply observing. And as we encounter these reflections ahead, let's carry this sense of groundedness and openness, allowing ourselves to engage with curiosity and compassion. And when you are ready, you can gently open the eyes of your heart, feeling centered and prepared for our shared presence and our sharing together. In the second half of life, people desire to give back, recognizing that they have been gratuitously given to from the universe, from society, and from God. This marks what's called the generative stage, where one is eager and able to generate life from their abundance for the benefit of following generations. Simply living and living simply becomes a commitment, ensuring that others can simply live. And in this stage, individuals move from doing to being to an utterly new kind of doing that flows almost organically, quietly, and by osmosis. They respond to their calling, letting go of the consequences of their actions. And this transition is accompanied by a new and deeper passion. It's reflected in statements like, "I must do this particular thing or my life will not make sense." Or they might say, it is no longer a choice. Life and the delivery system are now unified. God's goal, which is always union, becomes evident as people in the second half of life realize that they are not separate from God, or from others, or from their true selves. And this realization leads to a transformative process, where individuals learn to become the servant of the soul instead of its master. Friends, spiritual maturation is a growth in consciousness and a radical surrender into divine love. The first half of our lives is spent building an identity, establishing our security, defining our boundaries, creating a zone of safety, and having controllable order. And we can liken this first stage of life to operating on low levels of consciousness, looking for one's center always outside oneself actually inoculates a basic sense of unworthiness, distrust of self, and subservience to those better, more qualified, or superior. What creates a breakthrough in consciousness is not simply growing old. Rather, it is growing inward in freedom. Hear these words again. If you make my word your home, you will learn the truth, and the truth will set you free. Freedom requires a radical surrender and a complete letting go, trusting the spiritual impulses of life. We grow to live our moments of failure or disruption with the lightness of spirit, a sense of openness to divine love, which appears like light shining through the cracks of darkness. And then living into our divine nature is the source of our freedom and happiness. We are created out of love and are made to energize the world in love, not mediocrity and self-preservation. Growing inward by falling upward means learning from our mistakes. We are invited to let go and surrender to the wild love of God, living into the endless vitality of life itself. Letting go into God is coming home to our true selves, where we discover that our root reality is infinite divine love. And in love, we are eternally free. So with that contemplative heart, let us enter into the silence for a moment. Thank you. people in the second half of life have an inner freedom that simultaneously holds joy and suffering. Our mature years are characterized by a kind of bright sadness and a sober happiness. It's a changed capacity to hold suffering creatively with less anxiety. The term luminous darkness perhaps best describes the simultaneous existence of deep suffering and intense joy that is almost impossible for most of us to imagine. An authentic life will almost always have a bright sadness to it. And in the second half of life, we learn to positively ignore and withdraw our energy from evil or stupid things rather than fight them directly. Daily life now requires prayer and discernment. We now have a spectrum of responses. In the second half of life, it is good just to be part of the general dance. And life is more participatory than assertive. And there's no need for strong or further self-definition. Living a life of authenticity, of being true to who we are at our core, isn't solely about an external expression or adherence to social norms. It's a journey of discovering our genuine selves. And it's often catalyzed by moments that deeply touch our inner being, unsettling and reshaping the way we perceive and interact with the world. For many, this profound shift comes through experiences that challenge the status quo, urging us to reorder our priorities and meanings. It might stem from moments of joy or profound pain, events that force us into a space where conformity feels suffocating, where embracing our unique identity becomes paramount. Attempting to cloak oneself in what's deemed acceptable often leads to a game of pretense, one that dims the vivacity of life itself. Attempting to cloak oneself in what's deemed acceptable often leads to a game of pretense. But it is in shedding these layers, in daring to be genuine and vulnerable, that we truly begin to live. Our primary duty is to be our unfiltered selves. We honor our individually and deepen our connection with the divine. This journey isn't confined by age or specific life events. It's about navigating the inner landscapes, discovering our most authentic selves, and offering that truth to the world. An offering that transcends societal expectations and resonates deeply with our spiritual essence. Life becomes more vivid when we embrace our honest, vulnerable selves, inviting others to do the same. Yes, when we embrace our honest, vulnerable selves, it sets up an energy that creates an invitation to others to do the same. And in this reciprocal sharing of authenticity, we breathe life into our existence and we connect on a profoundly human level. And if we are on course at all, our world grows much larger in the second half of life. Second half of life people soulfully create room to honor the needs of the first half. And yet another paradox, our circle of real confidence and truly close friends will normally grow smaller, but also more intimate. And we are no longer surprised or angered when most people, and even most institutions, are doing those first half of life tasks. And perhaps we're even more compassionate. In fact, that is what most groups and institutions and young people are programmed to do. We shouldn't hate them for it, doing those first half of task life. First half of life task. Institutions must by necessity be concerned with membership requirements, policies, procedures, protocols, and precedents. And if they are working institutions, they need to have very clear criteria for hiring and firing, for supervision and management, and having rules for promotion and salaries. It's necessary that they do these things well. But they are nevertheless ego needs and not soul needs. The bottom line of the gospel is that most of us have to hit some kind of bottom before we even start the real spiritual journey. Up to that point, it is mostly religion, and first half of life religion at that. At the bottom, there's little time or interest in being totally practical, efficient, or revenue generating. We just want to breathe fresh air. And the true gospel is always fresh air and spacious breathing room. The ego and most institutions, well, they demand a tit-for-tat universe, while the soul swims in a sea of abundance, of grace and freedom, which cannot always be organized. So let's take a moment to swim in a sea of abundance, grace, and freedom as we enter into the silence. Friends, thank you for your attentiveness and your loving kindness. Our spiritual practice this week, it comes to us from Kathleen Dowling Singh and her book, The Grace in Living. And speaking of loving kindness, Kathleen Dowling Singh is a hospice worker and psychotherapist who taught how her spiritual practice of offering loving kindness to herself and others deepened in the second half of life. So this might not be specifically a spiritual practice, but it's kind of a tips for the road for those who practice metta or loving kindness. And this is what she writes about. She says, another thing that is noticeable in this transformed nature of my relationship with metta practice, a practice of loving kindness for self at first, extending then to others through the inner merging with the thoughts, may I be happy, may you be happy, may I be well, may you be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May you be peaceful and at ease. She says, I remember the first times that I sat to do metta practice and found powerful resistance in my mind. Imagine that, resistance to offering myself happiness and wellness and peace and ease. The resistance was the belief in my unworthiness, my conviction that I didn't yet deserve to be happy and hadn't yet earned being peaceful. It was both sad and stunning to become aware of the resistance of all those deep, damaging, draining beliefs. And of course, my kind wishes for others were a bit shallow, not really authentic, when I couldn't even hold them for myself. Gradually, I began to rest in a dispassionate place of stillness where there was enough clarity to see the stories that gave rise to those mistaken beliefs, and just observing, just looking, they began to dissipate. After a while, it made me laugh to myself to see how stuck I had been. So metta practice, loving kindness practice, began to happen from a new place, actually resting in loving kindness. And her prayer is this: may this space I call me be happy, well, safe, peaceful, and at ease. There is a deeper place, closer to essential nature, less filled with ego's thoughts, that holds the intentions and wishes. And she says, it is grace. Well, thank you again, friends, for sharing this time. Let us say goodnight to our podcast and YouTube listeners before we enter into dialogue. And let us share this benediction that love is the way and that you are love. So each of you, just stay awesome and be love. We hope to see you again soon. Good night.